temple. She had that unique charisma that charmed all ages and still does. Rent a Shirley Temple movie and everyone watching it gets pulled in by her. Even though by today's movie standards her films are a little sappy, her effervescence timelessly shines through. And despite being raised by a stage mother, she grew into a gracious ambassador. On the other end of the spectrum, for those of you not on Twitter, there are some suggested Olympic pickup lines. One that cracked me up was, "Hey baby, my hotel room is finished." You know your website won't be left unfinished if it's been developed by my sponsor, Frogstone Media. Mike Kahn breaks rules in web development and social media marketing. He's awesome. Check him out, frogstonemedia.com. Although Valentine's Day is this week, there are people who ignore it, don't like being told they have to do something on that day for someone they love. Others head into panic drive because they don't have a date. And others use it as an excuse to get out and party. The best part of Valentine's Day, truly, is when it's over because all of that chocolate will be on sale. Just saying. But because it is a day set aside for love, I naturally sat down with the queen of dating, Jen Bryan. So what was your first and best date?
My first and best date was 7 years ago in Southern California when I lived in Huntington Beach. It was my actual first date after my 6-year relationship ended, and my dad set me up with one of his coworkers, so I'll go on a date with. And it's not very often that your dad comes on a business trip and sets you up, but it was a great date because it was so out of the box and something I had never experienced. We ended up going to a bar, and then we walked down to the beach and just kind of borrowed someone's patio furniture in Newport and kind of sat next to the beach and just had great conversation.
Nice.
It was fun. It was original, at least.
Dad did okay.
Dad did okay. Yes. It was a lot of fun. It was something I always has stuck with me as just something that was special. You know,
it's a bar of sorts, a reference point.
Exactly. Like some like creativity, being able to actually play on something out that actually had meaning.
Yeah.
You know, like it wasn't just let's go to dinner.
The boilerplate, the standard, blah, 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 blah. That's how I am with roses. They're beautiful, but couldn't you at least make an effort, go to a florist, you know, and pick out the flowers, you know, or, you know.
Do something like, I like sunflowers, you know, they're super cheap, like $3.99, but there's something different.
Exactly.
I've always loved sunflowers. Exactly. I made a sunflower quilt as a child because I love the flowers, you know. Like, most girls want rose petals. I'm like, sunflowers, they last a lot longer, too. So it's kind of nice.
I dated a manager of a nursery for a while, and he didn't like yellow roses. Because they're always delivered to hospitals.
Oh.
So now I don't like them because the association now that he planted the seed.
I never have understood the roses, like, significance. Like, who came up with that?
Because they're higher quality. They're a little more picky about how they're grown and the attention. Even though they grow wild and all the bugs and aphids and there's so much attention needs to be brought to them. I think that's why they cost more. And because they cost more.
I was talking about the different colors of the significance they place on them. Like, where
Victorian,
did that come from?
Victorian times.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, look it up sometime. It's not just roses. It's all the different flowers. All have meanings. I mean, read some of them now and most of them are just so depressing and negative.
That's what I mean. Like, who wants to, like, get that? Like, oh, if you don't get red, then it means something bad.
Yes.
Basically, it's happened or to your friend or you fall into a category. That's not fun. You don't get excited when you read the meaning behind each of them.
Yeah, like, who came up with them? Who made that decision? And all the blind sheep that just followed.
I know, like, and Valentine's Day coming up and everyone wants flowers, not knowing what it actually means with the color that they get.
So what was your worst date?
My worst date ever. I think when the person told me when I was teaching high school special ed that I had a job that was pointless and I couldn't help the kids and it was a lost cause.
Wow.
And he said that there was no point, I should just give up now and pretty much quit my job. And thought there was nothing wrong and thought we were going to go on a second date when I devoted my life to special needs, troubled children. and couldn't understand why I didn't want to go out with him, like repeatedly telling him how offensive that was, that you put down my career choice and all my degrees and all of how we spent
so apparently it turned into a special needs date.
Apparently, because if you can't get the point, that's kind of what I was talking about.
It's a head flicking moment.
And it is, and like having to tell someone over and over why you don't like them is like emotionally exhausting. So it's like actually teaching special ed because you're putting in all this effort.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
not seeing the reward right away, what you're putting into it. So that was like 2 years ago that happened, and that it stuck with me. It was horrifying, actually.
How did you meet him? How did you?
I met him online on a dating website, and so he worked for the state. And like, you think that people like with their jobs are going to be able to identify with them, and that's just not the case.
There are a lot of departments in the state,
and he worked for the department of like he transported. Like prisoners and stuff. So I thought he would understand what I did because I worked with juvenile delinquents. Here I am thinking we're gonna have a lot in common.
Well, maybe that's why. Maybe that's why he became judgmental. He became hardened, jaded.
Yeah.
Because he worked with people that just didn't climb the ranks of self awareness or self confidence, and maybe he just assumed that anybody who looks like this is going to equal that. And that's very sad, actually.
It is sad. And I wrote my master thesis on what actually the predictors of juvenile incarceration were and like ending up in prison. And the number one predictor of incarceration is academic failure. And since special needs kids fail out of school a lot more frequently, that is the biggest predictor of them actually being incarcerated, which is why there's such a high prison population. So I was kind of like, I'm trying to keep them out of prison, and you're saying they're just going to end up there anyways when that my research and my master's degree would say otherwise.
That's very sad.
It's very sad that people write people off, and so many people do it. It was just very difficult to hear that that's how many people actually think that way.
And on a date.
And on a date. On a first date, nonetheless.
There are different ways of making impressions, and
you know, I think on a first date, it's supposed to be light, and you're supposed to see if you have anything in common, not, like, say offensive
things. All surface, easy stuff. How about that game last night?
Exactly. Are you into football? Like, what do you like to do with your free time? Not, like, your career is a waste. Like,
thank you for telling me I'm taking up space.
Exactly.
That it's been swell. Gotta go.
I spent $450,000 on my education, and it was a total waste. Thank you for that. Like,
thank you for validating my loser status.
Exactly. Everything I put my heart and soul into wasn't worth it.
What have you noticed is missing from dating now that maybe used to be ever present, maybe say 30, 40 years ago?
The communication. I think that we live in a day and age where we don't actually communicate. We think we do because we text and we email and play on Facebook. But so much of our dating is through social media now. We don't actually take the time to pick up and call the people we're dating, check in with them, actually have that face-to-face interaction. We can meet and have conversations with people we've never met. 30 or 40 years ago, that didn't happen. Like, I've devoted my life now to helping people have that interaction, bringing back that, doing social events so people actually can connect and see if they have that chemistry. You know, so many people get divorced. Why is that? Perhaps, like, when you meet through social media and, like, online dating, you don't actually ever get to know the person. You have an idea what that person is. And when you actually meet them in person, you know, I think that's what's lost. We already have those expectations and we don't want to be disappointed.
Do you know how your parents met?
My parents met at work, actually.
Ah, the old employment.
Yes, they met one another when they were working, and it was their second marriage for both of them. And I think that they had a connection, though. It was something, they didn't work together. They worked for different insurance companies, but they met in passing, and you know, over time, they decided to date. And like, there was that human connection, there was that bond, there was that chemistry. And they're still married today.
Bada boom, bada bing.
I guess so. That little, at least they weren't co-workers, you know, like that's never a good place to meet someone.
Well, you probably accumulate different stories of how couples have met and maybe, you know, take some of those and apply them or assist other people with them.
Yes, I do. I think that the best way to meet someone is through a friend or out and about in a social environment because you get to see the person who they actually are, like up front. If you have that chemistry, do you get along? Do you have similar interests? So if you meet them out in an environment, like you're enjoying a concert, they're there, you're more likely to probably get along with that person and be compatible versus if you met them online.
And some people have, like, well, I'm thinking of one of my cousins, who she decided she was going to meet the man at a bookstore. So she just parked herself in the little coffee area. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, this man came up and, what are you reading? And they're happily married with two kids. Yeah. So
it's about having similar interests and finding someone that you're going to be able to share experiences with. That's what I tell my clients. You want someone that you're going to be able to go through life with. I'm a marathon runner. It's important to me to be with someone that thinks that exercise is important. So where would I meet someone then that had those similar
They need to goals? Leave the couch.
Yes, basically. And I try to date people that sat on the couch, and that does not work out well, because when I want to go out running, they want to like sleep all day. You don't really get along. You don't have a lot to offer one another.
No. Pretty limited.
Pretty limited in what you can do.
I like Doctor Who, but I think this marathon of 46 hours should be wrapping up now.
Exactly. So just having similar ambitions in life. I think that that's part of also the interaction in person. You have to know what you want out of life. Are you ambitious? Is the other person ambitious? Are they going anywhere? Are they complacent? Are you ambitious? You have to have similar goals and values. And from 30 or 40 years ago, that was so much easier. Everyone wanted to work hard and have like the American dream. Now there is no really American dream people are working for. It's just, I want things. I want to accumulate wealth. There is no idea what that family part of that is.
And the sense of self and who you are and mm-hmm. enjoying life.
And wanting to have someone have those experiences with you. We're so focused on our careers and making it that we forget that we need those relationships to be successful. Like, I personally have been able to build this company so much faster because I had a support system. I had a great boyfriend. I was teaching full-time when I started, and I would have never been able to run the company, teach, and have a relationship in my mind, but it made it so much easier because I had someone that knew how hard I was working behind the scenes and supported my goals and ambitions, and it motivated him. So I think that when we take into account how much someone can actually help us succeed and push us to our goals, that we ended up in a much better place than we started.
Now, what was that moment when he decided that I need to step up and help people on a professional level?
I was writing a blog under a pseudonym because I was a high school special ed teacher and couldn't write under my real name about my dating experiences. And I didn't know how well read my blog was until one of my friends that was at Harvard said they were studying me about what I was writing, because I was telling the truth about my dating experiences. I wrote about my 7 years worth of dating experiences as dating as a hobby of mine. And I was realizing how many people my stories were actually touching, because I was telling the truth, the hard truth, the things that we don't want to admit, the things that we think about and never actually want to say out loud. I was saying those things. And so I decided in that moment, like when people just kept telling me, like I had this different perspective and I was already teaching, I was like, was in the car one day and I was like, you know what? I'm going to start the company. I'm going to start the Queen of Dating. And I came home and I did it. And it was just like, I never look back from that moment.
And that's all she wrote.
No, I kept writing, though. I kept writing about my experiences. I still write under my pseudonym as well, because I'm so well known now that I can't. I write my blog for the company, but I still write under my pseudonym as well.
And what is your pseudonym?
30-something single girl.
30-something single girl.
Yeah, so my experiences have been put out there for the world. Now that I'm not a teacher, it's not such a secret, but it's been very personal. My journey, you know, like through owning the company and leaving teaching and not having the support of my family and just like having to put it all out there and realize I wasn't being judged for it. People wanted to support me. That was the biggest change for me, is telling my story of how many people could relate to what I was going through and just felt like no one else knew at the time. Like they thought no one else was experiencing the same things as I was.
Now, what do you say to, say a man says, well, you can't possibly understand a man's point of view on the challenges of dating?
Most men actually relate well to me because I say it like it is. So that's the joys of me. I love football. I've always been more of a boy in that way than a girl. I'm not the most emotional girl in the world. So I would say, okay, tell me the experience and I'll tell you a story, basically. Let me show you I know what you're talking about. And like, I've never actually had anyone say that, because I always talk about my life to make people feel more comfortable. That I've been there, done that, seen that. Nothing you say is going to shock me and I'm not going to judge you.
So how do you get yourself out there to let people know that you're here, besides the 30 single blog?
Well, I don't advertise on that, actually, my company. That's my personal life. I go to networking events frequently. I am on TV shows. I work with radio stations. I am always out and about in the community. Word of mouth from clients. I don't advertise. Everyone knows who I am because of my clients being satisfied with what I've done for them and through the events I put on.
So say someone calls you, let's say who's 42. Mm-hmm. And it's been a dry spell.
Okay. A dry spell. You know? Like sexually or dating wise?
Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, and maybe she's just kind of lost out of the, you know, the old, you know, the pool when you're younger, you have a group, you have a crew, mm-hmm. you know, like Sex and the City, you have your buddies and you're going out every weekend or, you know, happy yeah. hour, but you don't have that anymore because maybe she's a career woman. Mm-hmm. And so she's kind of at a loss as to where to start because she doesn't really want to go on the online dating mm-hmm. sites. And so
that's where I come in. I actually work with clients one-on-one and do a personalized dating plan to help them actually get back out there. I have clients from 25 to 65 right now. And a lot of my older clients are divorced and don't know how to date in this modern age. So what I do is I work with those clients one-on-one and actually take them out to social places where they're going to be able to meet people that they have things in common with. And I actually help facilitate those conversations with those people. So if they say, oh, I think that man's attractive, I'll go screen them, talk to them as their friend. And I play wing woman.
I was going to say wingman. So, yeah,
yeah, okay. I'm their wing woman, but everyone just thinks I'm their friend because I play it off so well. You know, and like I'm able to help nice. People meet people and I can give my client feedback on how they're doing, what they need to say differently. Kind of I can intervene. I can ask the questions. I can screen the person as they're talking to them, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's even better than like the online dating process because I can tell you instantly pretty much if this is going to be a good person for you to continue to talk to or not. Is it a waste of time? So
now, do you facilitate speed dating?
I do. I do speed dating events. I'm doing a huge speed dating event with a radio station for 1,200 people in 3 weeks. I do speed dating myself as well. I do it at SAC Anime and SAC Supercons. I do them across the country, actually help the Comic-Con goers and anime goers find love at the conventions. So I do it on different scales, different people, different genres across the board.
Flexibility.
Flexibility is important, but you know within 3 minutes if you have anything in common and ever want to see that person again. That's what I love about speed dating. I give the people the questions to ask. I make it super easy because here's what you should be asking versus what you think you should be asking.
I tried speed dating years ago and it annoyed me because mm-hmm. I had to keep repeating myself. That's just me. Yeah. You know? But I understand some people that love that, that get off on that like boom, 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 you know, off to the next bullet point, bullet point, bullet point, bullet point.
Well, it's one of those things where you're putting yourself out there. And I feel like if you're willing to put yourself out there and make yourself vulnerable, good things are going to happen. So even if you don't meet anyone at speed dating, it means you're willing to try, which means you're going to be putting yourself in more situations where good things are going to come to you in that way.
Now, what kind of events do you plan going outside the box?
Well, okay, so going outside the box, I have a huge event coming up at a hotel in Sacramento. It's the Citizen. It's called Bag Your Valentine. And I was able to book 3 floors for the event. And we have so many different vendors coming in. And it's the point of the event is to bring people together and facilitate conversation and actually get them to meet. So we're doing a comedy show called Flirting with Laughter. We're doing sport and socially games. So like facilitating sports and kind of playing and being able to get to know one each other on teams. In addition to that, we're going to be doing singles bingo. So you have to go around to get signatures and like kind of meet everyone. We're also having the radio station there to be able to give away date prizes if you're able to interact and get so many people involved. We're doing, one of my friends is a Sony Wright recording artist. He's going to be performing tracks from his new album. We also have a numerologist and psychic. She's amazing. She's read me several times. And then in addition to that, we have the DJ. So I feel like we have every avenue of entertainment you could possibly have in one building.
That is quite an event.
It has been quite the undertaking, but I think it's going to be so much fun because nothing like this has ever been done. It's a pre-Valentine's Day party. It's 2 weeks before Valentine's Day. It gives you that opportunity to meet someone to actually spend Valentine's Day with in a non-stressful way.
I'll probably be uploading this the week of Valentine's. So it'll be a couple days before maybe somebody, Mr. or Miss Lonely Hearts, watching another old episode of Gilligan's Island. Yeah. Any suggestions on not feeling depressed when Valentine's Day hits?
I would say get out. Like, I've gone out by myself on Valentine's Day before, and you'd be surprised how many people are at the bar that are lonely and, like, wanting to meet people. So I would say get out of the house, because that's the worst feeling in the world, is having a pity party at home for yourself. Whether it be that you go out with your girlfriends, you go out by yourself. I've gone out with myself many times and forced myself to go talk to people sitting at the bar. Because when you get out of your comfort zone, actually when you grow as a person, sitting at home isn't going to change your situation. So I would say really push yourself to do something that you normally wouldn't do.
Yeah, I have no problem. Whoever's sitting next to me at a bar, they hear from me whether they want to or not. Exactly. Who are you? What's your story?
But for so many people, they're so afraid to take that first step.
Yes, they are.
And, you know, like, I would look at meetups. I would look in your community, see what kind of events are going on. Because there's so many things for Valentine's Day. I know at the, like, the local places here, like Thunder Valley is having, the casinos are having events. Other places are putting on events for singles on Valentine's Day. So there's no reason whatsoever for you to be sitting at home on the couch.
And it doesn't have to be a singles event.
No.
Just go out, like she said, just go out for a dance or have a drink and go on a hike just to go outside or go for a walk or something.
I know. And I think Valentine's Day is like on a weekend this year, so it's even better because there's so many other things that are going on in the community. Go to a wine festival. Go wine tasting. Go do something that's going to make you happy. And don't worry so much about what the date is. Just get out there.
So do grade schools still have the, for kids, exchange the Valentine's? Does that still?
It happens more in regular than in special ed. I always did Valentine's Day parties for my students. We're not supposed to do those anymore. We're not supposed to have any holiday parties.
Yeah, see, I wondered about that. Everybody's so PC now. It's just crazy.
It is crazy because I think the root of Valentine's Day was actually show appreciation for one another. And trying to teach children appreciation this day and age is very difficult.
Yeah, and they wonder why dating is tough.
Right? At a young age, we were taught to love unconditionally. And when I taught special ed in all those years, and I actually taught regular ed as well when I was younger, I always saw, like, the children love you unconditionally, and therefore you as a teacher love them unconditionally. It's the purest form of love you actually can have is with your students, because they will do anything for you. If you show them love and respect and kindness, like, they want to make you happy and they can change. When we become grown-ups, we're unwilling to change. We're so set in our ways. And that's the sad part about the holidays and traditions going away from school, is that those messages and lessons for children are lost.
Now, when did you officially become the queen of dating professionally?
It was 14 months ago.
14 months.
14 months, yes. It's crazy how much your life can change in a year, though.
Yes, it's true.
It's nothing like it was, and it's better than I ever thought it could be.
Now, what are some specific feedbacks that you've been receiving?
From clients?
Mm-hmm.
That I changed their life in the sense that I gave them hope. That's the biggest thing is I give people. I give them hope, and I give them the tools to get into successful relationships. I have clients that are living together now, engaged. Like, I get to hear feedback all the time. Even though they're not active clients anymore in relationships, they know I'm their friend. They can call me. They can ask for help. And I think that's the biggest thing is I hear is that they can always come to me. I had a client text me last night, should I go talk to this guy? I'm accessible. So the feedback I always get is, like, I always get back to people. I always make them feel important. Even though I have a million things going on, my clients come first.
So there's no disconnect.
There's no disconnect. Because I'm invested in their life just as much as, like, they're invested in, like, hiring me. It's important for me because I've devoted my life to helping people to see them end up successfully in relationships. And if they're not being successful, then I go back to the drawing board and, like, work with them again. Are you following your homework? Are you doing this? What is going on? And I try to figure out what the problem is because I want them to be happy. Everyone wants love.
Whether they know it or not.
I think we all want it on some level. Some of us like to deny the fact that we actually need it, though.
Well, I think some people are just disconnected because they haven't received it ever. Unconditional love from their family to begin mm-hmm. with, for whatever reasons their childhood mm-hmm. experiences were not the best. Mm-hmm. And so they just have any personal experience. They have no reference point mm-hmm. until they meet. I think of friendships mm-hmm. are really the first level of love, because you care about that person so much and you have an inkling, a taste, mm-hmm. an idea of what that could be, and then you raise the bar to a relationship. Well, do you have gay clientele?
I do, actually, and that's like a lot of people have asked me about that. I actually put on a LGBTQ event back last April. It was one of my first events because I had so many people asking me in the gay community to actually do something for them.
Great.
Because they didn't want to do the hookup thing anymore. They wanted to settle down. They wanted to know what their options were, and there was nothing out there for them to actually meet. So I did speed dating for that community.
Field standby.
Well, I was trying to figure out the best way to facilitate an event like that without people being scared to come to it. Right. I wanted to make sure that people felt comfortable. The event was held at a place that was private, so no one from the outside world could see it. I wanted to make sure everyone felt safe and secure, because that's, like, the biggest thing I think about, like, the stigmas that go around that. I would never want anyone to feel like they're going to be persecuted for their life choices, because love is love. Everyone deserves love, and I don't discriminate.
So what are your final thoughts for those on the search?
Don't give up. I think that, like, when we get defeated, that's just teaching us how to actually be resilient, you know, when things don't work out the way we want to. you just have to dust yourself off and get back out there. Like, it took me 7 years to get into the relationship of my dreams, and this was me dating 24/7 different people all the time. And I think that it teaches you what you do and you don't want. So see it as an experience versus a failure or a mistake if it doesn't work out with someone.
Pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and start all over again.
Exactly.
If it's good enough for Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, it's good enough for you.
Yeah, exactly. You can do it too.
I am offering this poem by Jimmy Santiago Baca. I am offering this poem to you. Since I have nothing else to give, keep it like a warm coat when winter comes to cover you, or like a pair of thick socks the cold cannot bite through. I love you. I have nothing else to give you, so it is a pot full of yellow corn to warm your belly in winter. It is a scarf for your head to wear over your hair, to tie up around your face. I love you. Keep it. Treasure this as you would if you were lost, needing direction in the wilderness life becomes when mature. And in the corner of your drawer, tucked away like a cabin or hogan in dense trees, come knocking, and I will answer, give you directions, and let you warm yourself by this fire. Rest by this fire and make you feel safe. I love you. It's all I have to give and all anyone needs to live and to go on living inside when the world outside no longer cares if you live or die. Remember, I love you. By the way, Jen travels around the country working with clients one-on-one and is available via Skype. Contact her via thequeenofdating.com. Heading over to Alaska now as I continue my national park highlights this 150th anniversary year. I've selected Lake Clark, which became a national park in 1980. The region has been continuously inhabited since early prehistoric times, and it's one of only three archaeological sites in the state. The lake itself is 1,056 feet deep and covers 128 square miles. Not only was Matt Niemann the first to fly over Mount McKinley, but he was also the first to fly into Lake Clark country in 1930 in a Waco 10 biplane on floats. National Park historian John B. Branson fondly shared the story of a longtime resident, Richard L. Pronicky. I've probably mispronounced his name, so I'll call him Richard. Richard prominently displayed a framed sign in his cabin that summed up his personal creed. Is it proper that the wilderness and its creatures should suffer because we came? He was born in rural southeast Iowa in 1916, worked as a ranch hand on a sheep and cattle ranch in the Blue Mountains in Oregon just before Pearl Harbor was attacked, moved to Kodiak Island in 1950, and built his cabin at Twin Lakes in 1968. He gradually lost interest in hunting, such as deer and bear, because he did not want his wild neighbors to suffer. He fished and ate what he caught. He loved to cut grayling or Dolly Varden in pieces and roll them in cornmeal, salt, pepper, and a dash of chili powder and fry them in hot fat. He didn't have a problem with other people hunting, as long as they followed game laws. He said there were three essential traits exemplified by a good hunter. 1. Make a good, clean shot. 2. Dress out the animal properly. And 3. Salvage all the edible meat. In fact, after a 1968 sheep hunt, he consumed a ram's meat, rendered the tallow, and used sections of the sheep hide for canoe seat covers. In September 1978, he found a mortally wounded 2-year-old bull caribou with both a hind leg bone and a front leg bone shattered by a hunter's bullets. He spoke with the shooter, who knew he had hit the caribou 2 times, but was overweight and too lazy to find his wounded animal. Richard was able to locate the animal after a diligent search and found it still alive, but didn't have a firearm on him to put it out of its misery. So he used his Schrade Walden old-timer knife and cut an alder club to stun the caribou. Then he used the knife to cut the caribou's throat to put an end to its suffering. Later that day, he put together 2 large pack loads of meat, along with the hide, and transported it off the mountain and down to the lake shore for a canoe paddle back to his cabin. He continued to clean up after hunters who didn't sufficiently salvage kills before they rotted, or bears claimed the carcasses. He was unhappy with sport hunters and guides who only salvaged parts of caribou and moose, such as the forequarters and backstraps. He felt it was necessary to salvage as much of the edible meat as was possible, including the neck, ribs, and tenderloins, in order for the animal to be completely legally and ethically harvested. He saw several instances of sport hunters simply taking the forequarters from caribou and then hiding the dismembered carcasses beneath the branches of spruce trees. Hunting became illegal after the authority of the National Park Service kicked in. Upcoming volunteer vacations available in Alaska at Denali National Park and Preserve, Chugach National Forest, and Tongass National Forest are available for viewing at AmericanHiking.org. Do something different this week. Use the good dishes every day. It isn't dishware, but the company that makes a meal special.